It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Tuesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny without Danny. His beach vacation continues, toes in the sand. Your boy is holding down the fort in our Half Street Studios in the Navy Yard on this, the 6th of August, 2024, 4+ hours today, taking you up to 6:15 and Nats pregame with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. Check this radio show out. This is George Mirasan Big. 3 p.m., we're spinning around the NFL with Brian Baldinger, who's in the middle of a training camp tour. 4 p.m., I'm giving away tickets to Blues Traveler at Wolf Trap ahead of the Beltway Blitz. And at 5 o'clock today, former Super Bowl champion general manager Scott Pioli calls in. He was in Ashburn with the Commanders recently, worked for LSU last year, knows Jaden Daniels well, has worked with Adam Peters, so a very, very timely guest. Plus, I was out of training camp today, caught up with Jahan Dotson and Dante Fowler. You'll hear those interviews at 4:30 and 6 respectively. So we will be very busy, but I am pleased to let you know that I am joined in studio right now by friend of the program and one of the voices of Nationals baseball, Dave Jagler is in the house, ladies and gentlemen. He will be on the air tonight, 6:15 pregame, with Charlie, as I mentioned, for Nats baseball. But he's kicking it with us first on his way over to the ballpark.
I'm my own pregame show.
That's right.
And I'm nervous. Usually I'm on with you for 3 minutes. I'm going to fill an hour? We're going to break down the 7, 8, 9 hitters for an hour.
Right.
Is that right?
And Alex Call is the only thing we're going to cover.
For a full hour.
56 awesome. Minutes of Alex Call. No, everyone, please. That's not what we're doing, I promise. Maybe for a minute or two. But it is good to have you, first of all. Welcome. What do you think? It's been a while since you've been in our studio. We've dressed it up a bit.
What do you think of my headphones?
Those are nice. Those look old school.
Mid-90s, I bought these.
Did you really?
I've not done talk radio in like 20 years.
Where did you purchase those headphones, do you think, if you had to guess?
Circuit City?
I was going to say a store that doesn't exist anymore.
Radio Shack?
So people may not know, you did daily talk radio at one point in time.
Yes. Charlotte, North Carolina, mid to late 90s, did morning talk radio, which I was terrible at because I like to watch games at night. So it's 11 p.m., midnight. Now I got to go to sleep and wake up at 4 in the morning or 4:30. I'm on the junkie schedule. No shot.
I don't think I could ever do a morning show. And I give them so much credit because, first of all, how early you've got to wake
right.
up. That takes years off your life. Like, no exaggeration. That is brutal. But on top of that, like you, not only am I a night owl, I watch everything. And I've got to.
You've got to be prep. I mean, you know I'm a preparation guy.
Absolutely.
So, like, I can't go to bed and not have watched the game I'm going to talk about the next day.
So now you're on a couple hours of sleep, basically.
Terrible. And then my son was born around that time, and it's like, can we match up our nap times around noon after the show is over? I was a zombie.
But you're doing
for 2
it right
years.
Anyway. Get out of the talk game. Get into the booth.
Be at the game. I'd rather be at the game, calling the game, than talking about the game the next day. Now, nightmare story from my first talk experience, Charlotte, mid-90s. I was the update guy, but I would fill in on the talk show when the host was on vacation or whatever. And you've got like a 4-hour afternoon drive show, new sports station in Charlotte, WFNZ. Everyone's got to have the fans, FNZ. And for a 4-hour show, I might get 2 calls. And I'm doing this show by myself.
That's a grind.
I have nightmare flashbacks about that. I don't know how I filled one segment, let alone 4 hours.
I remember when
we had nothing to talk about.
Yes.
There was no baseball team. This is off season from the Panthers.
Right?
I mean, the Panthers are new. Hornets are in the off season at that with the Charlotte Hornets. And there was no Major League Baseball. I'm like, what am I going to talk about for 4 hours? Just me and myself.
So I remember when I first got into talk radio.
Bad radio.
Long before I even worked here, I started here. The station flipped to sports in 09, and I was like an assistant reporter, but got to do a couple of nighttime weekend things initially here on The Fan. But I was doing talk radio for years and years over at Sirius XM. And I remember very early on when I started doing sports shows, and the first one that I got on what I call like an adult channel, I was doing kids talk and teenage sports radio, all this stuff.
I mean, started when you were 7, 4, however old you were.
But when I did my first, it was MLB Network Radio, and it was 4 hours. It was 5 to 9 p.m.
Wow.
And I remember I got like 4 minutes into the segment, and I thought I'd prepared. You know, I'm like, I will have nothing but content. I've got hours written in this notebook. And I'm like 4 minutes into this 15-minute first segment.
And you're done.
And I am ready to peter out. And I'm just staring at the phone bank going,
please.
Please flash. Please. That anxiety when you first start in radio
yes.
is pretty incredible.
Yes. So from there, I was in Charlotte for about 7 years, did some play-by-play, did a lot of basketball, some baseball. I go to Boston, and I'm the fill-in announcer for the Celtics, but did afternoon talk show with Eddie Andelman. Who was
on that Celtics team? Give me a time frame.
This is Antoine Walker, Paul Pierce.
Oh, okay.
Tony Delk,
Let's
Tony
go.
Battee.
Tony Delk was dropping like 50 every couple of games at one point.
And then 7.
Yeah, I mean,
he'd shoot nothing but threes, but Pierce is really good. Antoine Walker was controversial. He was, you know.
Yes.
Either you
his
like
shorts
him,
would hang down past like his ankle. You know, his shorts would basically touch his shoe tops.
Yeah, and he would take the most ill-advised threes at any time. So
right.
A lot of people didn't like that. But so this talk, I'm working with Eddie Andelman, who is kind of the godfather of what you're doing. I mean, he had the first sports talk show in Boston. He was the precursor to WFAN and WEEI and WJFK. He was the first. And so he was an older guy. And so I was the young guy. He was the old guy. And we did a show. And this is in the heyday of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. This is the break the curse. You know, 02, 03, they lose to the Yankees. In 07, 04, they break the curse. And this is around the time that Brady and Bledsoe is going on. And then Brady takes over as the Patriots quarterback. But everyone wants to talk about Red Sox all the time. And so having a baseball team talking sports talk radio, it was every day, even in the offseason. And as Terry Francona would say, it was 162 one-game seasons. It was that intense talking baseball. It was a really fun time to be in sports talk radio, but much different than now. Like, there are very few places where baseball carries talk radio, even though it's a great talk radio sport because there's games every day.
Absolutely.
So we would deep dive into what the manager was doing and why'd you use this pitcher and why, you know, why didn't Manny Ramirez not run out that ground ball? I mean, it was Red Sox every day, even as Brady's, building this mini dynasty early in his career. And, oh, by the way, is it going to be Bledsoe or Brady? And that whole, did Belichick make the right choices? Have we had a final score on that one?
I think he did okay there.
Okay.
So we're still waiting on the final results to come back in, but with 94% of precincts reporting, I think he did okay there, yeah, with that.
But we were walking in from, through the break room, and one of the salespeople was telling you about, hey, talking about Jayden Daniels and QB1, this is all settled. I mean, no, you want this to drag on.
Right, exactly.
You want 5 more months of this, because we did Brady Bledsoe for like 2 years, even after Bledsoe was gone.
I actually didn't want this one to drag on, and here's why. And to your point, the news of the day, right, everyone's been hearing it on the station throughout the day, is that Dan Quinn came out first thing this morning at his press conference, and he said Jayden Daniels is going to start the preseason opener on Saturday, a noon game against the Jets. We have been waiting for Daniels to be named starter, and that has not actually happened, but this is a massive step toward that. But it was very weird, Jags, because they came out over the weekend. They answered a question, will Daniels play in the preseason? And Quinn said yes. That's all he said. He said he would play. And then there was a follow-up, why is it important for him to play? But they didn't say he was going to start the game, and he's been splitting reps, not 50-50 anymore, but pretty consistently with Marcus Mariota throughout. And so, number one, I thought that was kind of weird, but you know how you've been around teams long enough. there is this like old school mentality of we have to feign competition, right? We all know how this is going to go. Yeah. We all know where it's going to end. But if we just name Jaden Daniels the starter, God forbid, how do I ever stand in front of the team? Well, the same way you would have. You just say that we drafted him number two. We guaranteed him, you know, close to $40 plus million. He's going to be the quarterback. But they did name him the starter today, so they passed the test. I was a little nervous. I knew they were going to name him the starter, but until we heard that, I thought, there's no way this charade goes into the weekend, right? But they did it, and I think people being out at camp today were breathing that sigh, that fresh air of relief, because Daniels will get the start against the Jets. But to your point, you know, Brady's a whole different story looking back, but there's nothing like the energy around a football team, or you know, you see it with the Nats right now with James Wood. When there's a fresh potential superstar that you can dream on a little bit, I love that we've got Wood with the Nationals, Dylan Cruz at AAA right now. Jaden Daniels is that guy for the Commanders. Fingers crossed, if the Wizards are bad enough this year, maybe Cooper Flagg's their guy. Like, you need that game-changing player that provides hope. And the Nats and the Commanders are checking those boxes.
I mean, think back where we were 2 years ago. I mean, the Nationals were losing 100 games, but they were losing games with guys who are they're not going to be part of the future. I mean, you can lose 100 games in baseball, but if you see that these guys are part of the future, then that's what you can gravitate to as a fan. I can latch on. I can follow this kid now, and I'm going to see him when he's a man and when he is the man. And they've taken that step, and you're seeing that with CJ. And CJ is having some ups and downs this season, but you're like, okay, when this team's good again, this is going to be a dude. And James Wood is that, and there's more dudes coming. And that's been the exciting part of this season. Even as, you know, they were kind of hovering there on the brink in that wild card, you know, jumble about 50, 60 games into the season, they've fallen off that pace. They're not going to the postseason, but there's still reason to go to Nationals Park these last 50 games to see James Wood playing every day and waiting on him to just turn on a ball and hit it like Jesus Sanchez did last night, about 480 up beyond the scoreboard. He's hitting everything, you know, 110 to 115. Once you get those things elevated, it's going to be a lot of fun to see how far those things fly.
Yeah, when he starts pulling the ball in the air, it's curtains. Right, right now, they're playing him almost on the line. He tripled down the line, and it almost got caught. That was wild the other day. For people that didn't see it, bases loaded, three-run triple. It didn't kick up chalk. It was probably 4 or 5 feet to the right of the line in fair territory. But the left fielder almost caught the ball on a left-handed batter.
So you'll appreciate it. You love like the inside baseball portion of play-by-play. So if you've seen, they put up the, and we're on the booth cam here on 106.7. Hi,
We're streamed on 106.7, the fans' YouTube page.
So they have the booth cam on us at Nationals Park, and they used my call of that Wood triple. And if you notice, as soon as that ball is hit, I gave it kind of a big buildup, because off the bat, in my mind, I'm going, that's an extra base hit down the line, just seeing the trajectory of the ball. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh no, the left fielder's coming over.
But he's not supposed to be there.
He's not supposed to be there. He's about to make a diving catch and ruin this call that I built up to be this huge extra base hit. So Churio makes the diving attempt. Then the ball goes by him. So now the ball's rolling in the corner, and you're figuring this is at least a triple, maybe possibly a four bagger. So as you're calling baseball on the radio, so you describe that the ball has gone by him down into the corner, you start picking up the runners. Abrams coming around, you know, Abrams scores. Yepes coming around third, he scores. All of a sudden, I look up, and Ruiz is not even at third base yet. And he's like leaking oil coming around third.
So I go
lumbering around third. and so when you have a sequential order, the way you call things, you do the base runners, then you do the batter. You kind of do them in order. Lead runner, second runner, last runner, batter. Well, all of a sudden, Wood, like a streak, slides into third base, and Ruiz is 50 feet from home plate.
I was going to say.
So I go, and Wood's already at third, and now the play, I had to get it out of order because Ruiz almost got thrown out at home when Wood was standing on third base.
Here's how it sounded in real time on 106.7 The Fan.
The 0-1. Swing, a line drive, left field, down the line. It is a diving catch, not made. The ball goes by him into the corner. Abrams scores. Yepes scores. Ruiz is lumbering around third. He's trying to score. Wood's already at third base. The throw home is offline. It's a three-run triple for James Wood. Nationals 4, Brewers nothing.
So good.
So you heard lumbering around third, he's trying. That's kind of like in television when you get this sign, right. Stretch. I'm stretching.
Yeah.
Because he's supposed to be home by now. I want to pick up what Wood's doing. It's like, I've got to come up with something to say because there's a long way to go between where he is and where he's got to be.
Any other runner player on the team would have long scored.
Yes.
But even for K-Bert, though, watching that play, it was shocking how far from the plate. When the camera found him, I thought he might have fallen down
right.
at some point. I mean, it was a tough go of it.
And if Wood had rounded third and tried for the four-bagger, he might have caught him.
Unbelievable.
But that was a fun play.
Here on Grant and Danny. I want to get inside PBP with you a little more as we go here this hour. But I was out of training camp today, and I knew we were going to be talking. I was thinking about this. So I'm watching. It's very, very hot. I don't know if I've mentioned that. So hot.
A little bit, yeah.
I'm not a guy that sweats. Oh, your boy sweat.
Oh, you had a little Strasburg going back in the day?
Yeah, there was some icy hot situation happening. But I'm watching practice, and I was thinking about it. The difference, you and I have talked about this, between football now, where these preseason games, we whittled it down to three. I think in the next couple of years, they're going to be playing 18 regular season.
Sure.
It's only going to be two preseason games. And of those two games, at most, you're going to see players play in one of them. The difference between that and spring training, where even veterans will play seemingly 20-plus times in a month as if that's a necessity. Guys like Ryan Zimmerman did whatever they could to not play in all those games. But it is funny to me that football has gotten to a point where they almost now are going to start seasons, and some teams do. Sean McVay does this with his veterans. We're not playing a single down because the injury risk is too high. But in baseball, you might log some of these guys like 60 at-bats or something.
Easy. I mean, you need 50 to, in some cases, close to 100 at-bats for guys to feel like they're comfortable. And I dial away from football until baseball is over. So, I'll lock in on week one. I'm not following the preseason. And sometimes I do some of those survivor pools. Like, how do you survive week one? Like, literally, week one in the NFL has got to be the toughest week to handicap because, you have a new coach like Dan Quinn. You'd love to have, like, three or four preseason games with everybody playing to get used to his system.
That's a good point because you can keep secrets now. I remember in 2012, I was on the beat with the then Redskins, and we were out at practice every single day. I flew and traveled to every one. There were four preseason games, and Griffin played in the first three through almost 30 passes. And I mean, I'm spending 70 hours a week around that team on that beat. And I felt like there was nothing we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was one particular practice even where we saw Robert Griffin run like a read option look with a mesh point, keep the ball, go around the edge, which would become the staple of their offense. And I tweeted about it and talked about maybe this is something they'll use him for. And that day, I get called into Mike Shanahan's office. And Shanahan's like, hey, Grant, he like slides a printed version of my tweet across the table. And he's like, this is the epitome of being in the principal's office. And he's like, I prefer you not to talk about, these types of looks for our offense. And I'm like, well, you did it. The fans were there. It was open public. Like,
kind of doing my job.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do. He didn't really understand, and I ended up having a good relationship with him. He thought if you were in the media, you are, like, working for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not in any way, like, you don't pay me, therefore I don't work for you. But anyway, I bring that up to say part of why, as it turned out, he was so upset about that was they kept their entire offense a secret. So week one, they debut against New Orleans, hang 40 points. Griffin throws for 300 yards. They ran an offense we never saw once at practice, in any preseason game. And I think now you're able to do that. Teams are so restrictive. Washington's got five open practices for the public. Some teams have zero. The Eagles have one. That you can, to your point, with a new coach, we have no idea what any of these teams are going to look like. So week one's kind of a disaster if you're trying to figure out what it's going to look like.
But I wonder how, when the real bullets are flying and you're playing games for real and you haven't done that in the preseason, how do teams react to that? I mean, baseball is different. It's an individual sport. Like you go up as the hitter, you're facing the pitcher. You can replicate that in spring training. Now, I mean, the teamwork in baseball might be relays, cutoff situations, bunt defense. But, I mean, so much is predicated in the NFL on precision for all 11 guys. I mean, if you have one guy out of place on defense, that can be the difference between you getting tackling the ball carrier for a two-yard game or giving up an 80-yard touchdown. So, I mean, to me, it almost seems like preseason is kind of worthless if no one's even going to play.
Speaking of the preseason, we'll talk to Brian Baldinger about the news that Jaden Daniels will get the start for the Commanders against the Jets on Saturday. Baldy's going to join me coming up at 3 o'clock today right here on The Fan. Dave Jagler's in studio. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Want to play a little overrated, underrated with Jags as we continue next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
That's right, Jags is in studio on Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. We will be talking Nats coming up in just a bit. I'm going to ask you about James Woods' start to his career, as well as Mackenzie Gore on the mound today. It's been a rough several-start stretch for him. He got to go back about 9 starts to find when he was rolling. Can he get back on the good foot tonight, and how will he do that? We will discuss that with Dave Jagler in just a bit here on Grant and Danny. But you were kind enough to stop by the studio on your way over to the ballpark. So when do you typically sit down in the booth, start getting ready? What's your normal routine like?
I'm going to be late today.
Yeah.
About now.
Okay.
I mean, usually for the 6:45 game, I roll in there around 2:30. Clubhouse opens 2:45. So I'm going to be on with you till 3. So I'll book it over there for 3:15. So a little bit late today, but I'll make an appearance in the clubhouse. Just check in, see who I want to see today. You know, we alternate who we do pregame interviews. Yesterday I interviewed Mitchell Parker. Today's Charlie's day, so he'll do a pregame interview. Depends when the lineups are out. It takes me 15 to 30 minutes to fill out my scorebook. Then I'll be down on the field watching BP, talking to the hitting coaches, maybe try to say hi to Matt Williams on the other side, former Nats skipper. Didn't see him yesterday. So just a lot of conversation. And, you know, honestly, I mean, we deal in the information business. I like to find out things that you're not going to read about on X or read about in, you know, on whatever article. I mean, I'm trying to find out things, you know, just one-on-one personal conversation, stuff I may use or may not use, but just trying to unearth that nugget.
Yeah.
That just you never know when it might come up.
It's hard to even get them in now with the pitch clock, which I think's been a revelation for baseball and a huge success. But in your job, the storytelling, the pace of the game that was a little more romantic and there was time to fill and you could work in some anecdotes, it's got to be harder to get them in.
Yeah, it makes it a lot harder. The only, you know, and the game dictates, you know, what you're going to do. If it's a close game or like last night, you know, Logan Webb's, you know, knocking out 10, 12 pitch innings and, you know, Corbin had some quick innings, you're not getting anything in. And if you try to cram it in, it's too much. But, You know, the other day we had a game in Phoenix that was 17-0.
Yes,
that,
you did.
That's story hour. That the game, you still on radio, you have to give the play-by-play, but the play-by-play becomes secondary. That's when you know, we're talking, you know, Jonathan Solano used to be with the Nationals. He's now the Diamondbacks bullpen catcher. I'm telling Jonathan Solano stories from 12 years ago and how he crossed over the border from Colombia into Panama in an onion truck just to get a tryout to be a professional baseball player. And that's why he was always called Onion. I was around the Diamondbacks last year. I'm like, where's the Onion? They're like, who? They don't know him as the Onion in Arizona.
No,
like, that's the Onion. He's the Onion. You don't know the story of the Onion? So, I mean, those are the kind of stories that you know, you could talk about in the past, but now you wait till it's 17-0 and then you get them in.
What is your second favorite sport, or let's say non-baseball season, or even now, to watch?
I mean, I'll be dialed in on the NFL as soon as baseball's over. I'm in front of the TV every Sunday, but I mean, the sport that I have the biggest fandom for is college basketball, and that's my alma mater, Syracuse. I follow them, and it's gotten harder just because I used to know everything about all college athletics. Now I can't even tell you who's in the Big 12 or the Pac-2 or the...
Nobody,
you know,
can.
Right. I mean, I grew up, you know, Big East basketball. It was, you know, Syracuse had great rivalries with Georgetown and St. John's and UConn and Villanova. And the fact that all those teams aren't in the same conference anymore is sad. But I still follow Syracuse basketball closely. So I follow college basketball probably more closely than anything else.
Did you see that? I think it was the ACC put out a congratulations
right.
tweet.
Stop.
To Katie Ledecky.
Stop.
Who went to Stanford.
Stop.
I mean, come on. Like, what? This is too much. Like, one of our own. Like, No.
You don't get to claim that
accomplishment, conference. No. You don't get to do that.
All right, fully in agreement on that.
Let's welcome in our producer, Darris Dameron, here, who's going to steer us in a little game of overrated, underrated. So normally Danny and I play this. Darris will throw categories at us.
Okay.
We've then got to give first thing that comes to mind, whoever we think is, or whatever we think, is the most overrated, underrated thing in that category. So, Darris, let's get it popping.
Happy to have you join us today, Dave.
All right, Darris.
Let's start with your favorite MLB, or excuse me, your overrated and underrated MLB ballpark.
Underrated, I'm going to go Seattle. I love the ballpark in Seattle. It's a great view. I've only been there a few times just because of interleague play. I love when we go to Seattle. I like the city and I like the ballpark.
T-Mobile Park is fantastic. I had never been there until the All-Star festivities last year and checked that one off the list. I think I had six to go at that time. It is top five for me. Yeah. So I like that one. Here's a sneaky one. Coors Field was great.
Yeah.
I really liked Coors Field. Obviously, it's a blast when you're there because there's offense. The outfield's huge. A lot of extra base hits and home runs and the ball flies. I just found the ballpark to be, I'd never really heard a lot about it. I really enjoyed it.
And they changed it a couple years ago. The area in right field, it used to be all empty seats. Now they blew all the seats out and they made kind of like the standing area, party deck, bunch of bars, restaurants. There are people there jammed in every night, even when the team's not playing well.
Which has been a few years now. All right, let's go overrated then.
Well, so the ballparks I really dislike probably wouldn't make it overrated because they're bad. And I mean, yeah. Miami would be at the top of the list, but I can't call that overrated because no one would rate that well. Nothing really gets me special with St. Louis. I mean, that's supposed to be, you know, great baseball fans, you know, great baseball city. It's kind of just, you know, an average ballpark to me. When I go there, there's no Wrigley Field vibe. There's no Fenway vibe. I mean, to me, St. Louis, you should feel that tradition. So the new Busch Stadium is just, it's kind of blah for me.
So Jags is going to hate my answer. Overrated ballpark, Fenway Pack.
Oh, stop.
I love Wrigley. I don't love Fenway.
Why?
It
smells like a ballpark. You walk in there, it's burnt sausage.
The history is awesome.
Yes.
Right? It's a museum. And if we're calling it a museum, great. I went on a tour of the ballpark. I loved it. Everything about it's uncomfortable. Walking from in the concourse is a disaster. If you have to go from one section, three sections over, just carve out three innings. I mean, there's nothing about it that is a fun experience.
The seats are tiny.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, and they're getting tinier. And I know I'm not getting bigger, so I don't know how it's happening, Jags. But yes, that one's a little overrated for me. And it was built, one of them 1911, one of them 1912. I don't know which.
Fenway's 19. They both opened in 1912, but okay. Fenway's older, yeah.
And I guess one started, you know, 1 year before. But of those two, and I just think they've done a much better job updating Wrigley, which is very high on my list, and Fenway is not. That's all.
Dave, Danny often teases you as being a relatively healthy gentleman when you come on our program. So this might be difficult for you, but give us your overrated and underrated snack.
Well, so I won't touch these things. I think they're vile. I think they should be they're contaminated with.
So I'm gonna love them.
Cheetos.
Oh, I hate Cheetos too.
Despise Cheetos. Just the orange stuff on your. I won't even touch. I don't want the orange stuff on my fingers. Like, how do they sell these things?
Cheetos are disgusting.
They should be banned.
I agree. I'll keep the good times rolling on overrated, and probably you'll disagree with this too. Any kind of like a granola bar, any kind of like you peel back some plastic and there's a bunch of like it's a moderately healthy. Let's eat this. No thanks. Give me the good
bad
stuff.
Bad take. Bad take.
Underrated snack, Jags.
Popcorners. I can plow through a half bag of those popcorners.
Let's
go. You get the right flavor.
I'll go old school. Goldfish. Give me a bowl of Goldfish and a Coke Zero, and I'll find a way to have a good time. Mm. I'm a big Goldfish guy. The traditional. I don't need all the extra cheddar and this weird flavor. Let's do a pretzel. Just give me a traditional Goldfish. Excellent snack.
Overrated and underrated baseball play.
Ooh, okay. We're making Jags feel at home here with some baseball.
All right. So an underrated play, I love a good back pick.
Yeah,
I love when you have the bases loaded, runners are first and second, and the trail runner's getting the big lead, and the catcher can just snap a throw to the first baseman, and bang, you're out.
That's good.
Is a well-executed play. You've got to execute the pitch, because you don't want to throw a strike, because your first baseman's out of position, so you've got to throw the pitch off the plate, and the first baseman can't break too early. You got to break right on time, perfect throw, get the tag on, get yourself out of the inning.
So we're kind of feeding from the same trough because I had two, the first of which was the little league play where you steal second, you get the throw down, you bring your runner home from third, although it did not work out for the Nats yesterday. Two days ago. James Wood got thrown out at the plate. But that well-executed play, it's like watching a perfect hit and run, you know, with two balls and a strike, runner starts moving, fielder goes to second base, ball takes the vacated area. Gorgeous.
I mean, the safety squeeze is in that category, too.
Yeah.
When it's a well-executed safety squeeze is awesome.
How about overrated?
Well, I saw it last night, and it kind of hit me the wrong way, and it led to the national scoring run, the balk. Like, the balk is... Most people don't know what a balk is. Half the time, pitchers are balking, and the umpires don't call it. And last night, Logan Webb did absolutely nothing wrong, and they called him for a balk. And he got so flipped out about it.
He was outraged.
He gave up two rockets in a row and had to be taken out of the game. Like it was nice, the Nationals score, but it felt like cheap. And so to me, I'm not a big fan of the balk.
So this is not a play. It's more of an accomplishment, but I've always felt this way. The cycle is just not, to me, cool, I guess, but give me extra base hits. Like, he got a single, a double, a triple, and a homer. Give me two doubles and a triple and a homer. It's like...
Right, that's a better game.
Exactly. Yeah. But the triple crown is the same way to me. It's these... There was a time where leading in these three things was the coolest thing in the world, and I don't even know if those are the three things I'd want you to lead in now. Like, when Miggy Cabrera wins the MVP as a triple crown award winner over Mike Trout, who had a better year, I'm now upset by that. So I just think the cycle is kind of a... It's neat enough, but it's an overrated accomplishment, in my opinion. I'd rather you hit two homers and two singles or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, let's do it that way.
Let's bring you into the realm of football. Give us your overrated and underrated NFL quarterback.
So I might not be the best judge of who's rated to say that they're over underrated, but I would buy some stock in Jordan Love. And what that kid did in the playoffs last year, I mean, I hadn't watched a ton of Packers games. What he did in the playoffs, I'm going, okay, that kid's got it.
He can spin it. Yeah, I love him.
So I don't know if it's fair to call him underrated because he did get some props for what he did in the playoffs, but obviously I knew his story filling in, you know, for Rodgers and all that, but I'd buy some stock in that kid.
I like that. Yeah, it's a good one. I'll actually had him as well, but I'm going to go opposite that. I'm going to go Trevor Lawrence. Everyone loves bagging on Trevor Lawrence right now. And I know that it hasn't been what it was. Sometimes Strasburg-esque, maybe Harper, like you become a villain because of the hype initially before people realize, oh, you actually are really good and that's okay. I just think Trevor Lawrence, after he got paid this offseason, there was this dialogue about him as if he's some buster and how did they pay him and why is he a starter? I don't think that's the case at all. He's a franchise quarterback, top 10-ish, 11, 12, something like that in the NFL. I think we over-talk about some of his struggles, and I think he's now underrated. What about an overrated QB?
Well, I'd say the quarterback of the Cowboys. I mean, because there's so much conversation about that. If he was the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals, how much would we be talking about him?
Dak Prescott.
I mean, I think he's got some positive qualities, but I mean, in the big games, it's not been there.
And he's about to make $60 million a year.
Should he?
It's not a small number. The market says yes, he's going to. Is he that level? No, probably not. But he's going to put up top five numbers again. And it's time to get paid, so you know how
right,
that works
right. In
the NFL. I think that's a really good one in terms of an overrated list. I would say if I'm looking at quarterbacks right now, this is recency effect because I don't think this guy before last year was rated by anybody. But I've seen a couple lists recently where Baker Mayfield is becoming a thing again, and I need everyone to calm down immediately. It was a nice year last year with great wide receivers in Tampa. If he does it again, maybe we'll give him a shot. Maybe to be in that conversation of, you know, back in the top half of the league. But when I start seeing him ranked 13th, 14th in the NFL again after 1 year in Tampa, I need everybody to relax. A good little overrated, underrated session with Dave Jagler. Let's talk James Wood next. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Remember, Brian Baldinger takes us around the NFL, one of our favorite NFL guests, at the top of the hour at 3 in 20 minutes. Huge Grant and Danny as we continue today. I'm taking you up to 6:15 and Nats pregame. Brian Baldinger, who's in the middle of a training camp tour, NFL Network, stops by at 3. We're giving away Blues Traveler tickets at 4. Former executive Super Bowl champion New England Patriots GM Scott Pioli is on the show at 5, and I had conversations with Jahan Dotson and Dante Fowler, Commanders receiver and defensive end. You'll hear those today at 4:30 and 6 respectively. So there's a lot going on. Jags, before we send you over to the ballpark to prepare for tonight's game, I did want to talk about James Wood, who continues to impress. If you look at the numbers, he's been on base, I believe, in 10 consecutive games. He is now hitting .348 over his last 7. His OPS is up around over 800 his last 15 games. Having really good at-bats, what have you liked? What do you want to see more of moving forward?
I've liked a lot. I mean, I've liked the plate discipline. I mean, he has that Soto ability to control the strike zone and limit the chase rate. Not quite what Soto was. I mean, no one's what Soto was, even at age 19, but he gives you a mature quality at bat. I mean, StatCast darling, right? I mean, everything he hits is over 105, and it was nice that he actually finally got some breaks here in the 10 games you're talking about. I mean, he was making outs routinely. You know, 105, 110, right at people. He's gotten a couple of breaks. Balls hit not quite as hard off gloves, deflecting for hits. The one thing, and again, it goes hand in hand with good plate discipline, and I get the sense that they don't want to put too much on him quickly. Hey, you got to change this, you got to change this. No, you're uber talented. Do what you do. But like last night's situation, he comes up in the 8th inning, 4-1 game, facing the lefty, Rodgers, and he's got the chance to be the tying run at the plate. And I just, there's part of me that would say, be just a hair more aggressive.
Right.
When the situation calls for it. And in that situation, he took a first pitch breaking ball for a strike. So in his mind, he's going, well, he's going to throw me a slider. Well, Rodgers threw a fastball dead in the absolute center of the strike zone. I mean, it was middle. And he took it for strike two and then chased a slider off the plate for strike three. And it's just like, I wanted him to swing at that 0-1 pitch and hit it in the second deck. So, but again, who am I to say that you've got to change your approach and be more aggressive?
Well, we talk a lot about this with him taking third strikes as well. You'd like him to be a little more aggressive, but the secret sauce for him is the discipline
of
and
course,
the spinning on
of
pitches.
Of course, that's why it's a fine line. You don't want him to all of a sudden be swinging at everything. And, I mean, he's got such a big zone to cover. And the other thing that's frustrating, and you got a little angry Jags on the broadcast last night. First of all, you have Logan Webb, who's about the best ground ball pitcher in baseball. Everything he throws is to the knees and below. And there was the at-bat where Wood walked. He walked on a 6-0 count. And it was three. There were two strikes in that at-bat that were below the knees they were not strikes and they're called strikes. And it boggles my mind how repeatedly this kid gets called strikes on pitches that aren't strikes. And the reason is, for a 6'2 guy, that's a strike. But for a 6'7 guy, that's below the knees. And to his credit, he never breaks a moat, never lets it show frustration on his face. And I'm not going to swing at a bad pitch, even if they're going to call me out on it. So that's, you know, part of those strike three calls, I think, are bad umpiring. And if you had the challenge system, which, you know, maybe coming in the next year he's patting the top of his helmet, and that's going to be a ball. But again, if there was anything that in that spot, especially in the eighth inning, when you have a chance to be the tying run, give me some urgency to swing the bat. That's the only little nit, and again, very, very small nit
Aaron
to pick.
Aaron Judge deals with the same thing.
Sure.
There's been a lot written about this the last couple of years in New York. Nobody gets more low strikes called on them. It's because of his size, to your point, and umpires have basically a strike zone in their mind, and they don't recalibrate.
Right. It's a normal strike for a normal human being.
Right. These guys are not that. Last one real quick is Mackenzie Gore. It has been a rough go of it. He's the guy in this rotation currently with the front of the rotation stuff. If you just peel all the layers back, fastball from the left side, he can run it up to 98. But it has been now a month plus of him really struggling. His ERA is 7.84 over his last seven starts. His ERA is over 5 over his last 15 starts. What are we keying in on tonight to see if good Mackenzie has made his return?
To me, I'd like to see a reliance on the fastball to get outs. His fastball is a swing and miss pitch. You know, a lot of guys need to go to their off-speed stuff to get swings and misses. He can get swings and misses on his fastball. And so I've got to see him establish that early. And the other thing is, you know, it seems like left-handed hitters last year and this year are very comfortable in the box against Mackenzie. Give me a fastball up and in on a lefty. I mean, because his slider is so devastating down and away, his curveball down and away. His changeup is a good developing pitch, doesn't throw it to lefties. You know, give me some fastballs in on the couple of left-handed hitters that he's going to face tonight. Because, like, in the start in Phoenix, he had a really good start going. Jake McCarthy, left-handed hitter, goes 3-for-3 against him. McCarthy in two games this year is 6-for-6 against Mackenzie Gore.
Wow.
Left-handed hitters consistently have had better splits against Gore the last 2 years. And to me, part of that is they're eliminating one side of the plate. Bust a guy up and in with the fastball, left on left, and then go to that slider, which is a wicked pitch.
Lefties against Gore hitting .319 last year, .311 this year. Righties considerably worse in the low to mid 200s.
With that stuff, that shouldn't happen.
Great point, yeah. Dave Jagler, one of the best in the biz, and we are lucky to have him and Charlie on the call night in and night out right here on The Fan. We should do this more. Thank you for hanging out, and we will be listening at 6:15 to pregame this evening.
Yeah, on my own pregame show today. It's awesome.
Leading into his own broadcast. Brian Baldinger is next, and then we got to discuss Dan Quinn. Making it official, Jaden Daniels gets to start against the Jets on Saturday. Grant and Danny without Danny on The Fan. Huge Grant and Danny as we continue today. I'm taking you up to 6:15 and Nats pregame. Brian Baldinger, who's in the middle of a training camp tour, NFL Network, stops by at 3. We're giving away Blues Traveler tickets at 4. Former executive Super Bowl champion, New England Patriots GM Scott Pioli, is on the show at 5, and I had conversations with Jahan Dotson and Dante Fowler, Commanders receiver and defensive end. You'll hear those today at 4:30 and 6, respectively. So there's a lot going on. Jax, before we send you over to the ballpark to prepare for tonight's game, I did want to talk about James Wood, who continues to impress. If you look at the numbers, he's been on base, I believe, in 10 consecutive games. He is now hitting .348 over his last 7. His OPS is up around over 800 his last 15 games. Having really good at-bats, what have you liked? What do you want to see more of moving forward?
I've liked a lot. I mean, I've liked the plate discipline. I mean, he has that Soto ability to control the strike zone and limit the chase rate. Not quite what Soto was. I mean, no one's what Soto was, even at age 19. But he gives you a mature quality at-bat. I mean, StatCast darling, right? I mean, everything he hits is over 105. And it was nice that he actually finally got some breaks here in the 10 games you're talking about. I mean, he was making outs routinely, you know, 105, 110, right at people. He's gotten a couple of breaks. Balls hit not quite as hard off gloves, deflecting for hits. The one thing, and again, it goes hand in hand with good plate discipline, and I get the sense that they don't want to put too much on him quickly. Hey, you got to change this. You got to change this. No, you're uber talented. Do what you do. But like last night's situation, he comes up in the eighth inning, 4-1 game, facing the lefty, Rogers, and he's got the chance to be the tying run at the plate. And I just, there's part of me that would say, be just a hair more aggressive.
Right.
When the situation calls for it. And in that situation, he took a first pitch breaking ball for a strike. So in his mind, he's going, well, he's going to throw me a slider. Well, Rogers threw a fastball dead in the absolute center of the strike zone. I mean, it was middle, and he took it for strike two, and then chased a slider off the plate for strike three. And it's just like, I wanted him to swing at that 0-1 pitch and hit it in the second deck. So, but again, who am I to say that you've got to change your approach and be more aggressive?
Well, we talk a lot about this with him taking third strikes as well. You'd like him to be a little more aggressive, but the secret sauce for him is the discipline
of
and
course,
the spinning on
of
pitches.
Of course, that's why it's a fine line. You don't want him to all of a sudden be swinging at everything. And I mean, he's got such a big zone to cover. And the other thing that's frustrating, and you got a little angry Jags on the broadcast last night. First of all, you have Logan Webb, who's about the best ground ball pitcher in baseball. Everything he throws is to the knees and below. And there was the at-bat where Wood walked. He walked on a 6-0 count. And it was three. There were two strikes in that at-bat that were below the knees. They were not strikes, and they're called strikes. And it just boggles my mind how repeatedly this kid gets called strikes on pitches that aren't strikes. And the reason is, for a 6'2 guy, that's a strike. But for a 6'7 guy, that's below the knees. And to his credit, he never breaks a moat, never lets it show frustration on his face. And he's, I'm not going to swing at a bad pitch, even if they're going to call me out on it. So that's, part of those strike three calls, I think, are bad umpiring. And if you had the challenge system, which, maybe coming in the next year or two. He's patting the top of his helmet, and that's going to be a ball. But again, if there was anything that in that spot, especially in the eighth inning, when you have a chance to be the tying run, give me some urgency to swing the bat. That's the only little nit, and again, very, very small nit
Aaron
to pick.
Aaron Judge deals with the same thing.
Sure.
There's been a lot written about this the last couple of years in New York. Nobody gets more low strikes called on them. It's because of his size, to your point, and umpires have basically a strike zone in their mind, and they don't recalibrate.
Right. It's a normal strike for a normal human being.
Right.
These guys are not that.
Last one real quick is Mackenzie Gore. It has been a rough go of it. He's the guy in this rotation currently with the front of the rotation stuff. If you just peel all the layers back, fastball from the left side, he can run it up to 98. But it has been now a month plus of him really struggling. His ERA is 7.84 over his last seven starts. His ERA is over 5 over his last 15 starts. What are we keying in on tonight to see if good McKenzie has made his return?
To me, I'd like to see a reliance on the fastball to get outs. His fastball is a swing and miss pitch. A lot of guys need to go to their off-speed stuff to get swings and misses. He can get swings and misses on his fastball. And so I've got to see him establish that early. And the other thing is, it seems like left-handed hitters last year and this year are very comfortable in the box against McKenzie. Give me a fastball up and in on a lefty. I mean, because his slider is so devastating down and away, his curveball down and away. His changeup is a good developing pitch, doesn't throw it to lefties. Give me some fastballs in on the couple of left-handed hitters that he's going to face tonight. Because like in the start in Phoenix, he had a really good start going. Jake McCarthy, left-handed hitter, goes 3-for-3 against him. McCarthy in two games this year is 6-for-6 against Mackenzie Gore.
Wow.
Left-handed hitters consistently have had better splits against Gore the last 2 years. And to me, part of that is they're eliminating one side of the plate. Bust a guy up and in with the fastball left on left, and then go to that slider, which is a wicked pitch.
Lefties against Gore hitting .319 last year, .311 this year. Righties considerably worse in the low to mid 200s.
With that stuff, that shouldn't happen.
Great point, yeah. Dave Jagler, one of the best in the biz, and we are lucky to have him and Charlie on the call night in and night out right here on The Fan. We should do this more. Thank you for hanging out, and we will be listening at 6:15 to pregame this evening.
On my own pregame show today. It's awesome.
Leading into his own broadcast. Brian Baldinger is next, and then we got to discuss Dan Quinn. Making it official, Jaden Daniels gets the start against the Jets on Saturday. Grant and Danny without Danny on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.